Hey, Charles.
Good afternoon, everybody. This is Charles and Zarina today. Welcome to our Tuesday afternoon mentoring call. Hello, Zarina.
Hey, what's up?
Matt, how are you?
I'm doing pretty good.
Got your internet back up and working today?
Oh, it was working all day today. I was excited, so it was pretty cool.
Nothing worse than not having internet service, is it?
No, and trying to work off a hotspot whenever it's super slow is always fun. So.
Oh, yeah, definitely. So Eddie's out again today. Eddie is in St. Louis, I believe, Arena, speaking at Arena. I'm hearing some background noise, Matt. Do you hear that?
Let me check who else jumped on here. So.
I just muted Kevin Moore.
Yeah, okay. Kevin.
It was Mr. Moore that was giving us all this.
Matt, I have no sympathy for you because I actually did a conference call from a Starbucks in Manhattan before.
Nice.
Yes.
Well, I did a call last night from Starbucks in Waxahachie, Texas.
Oh, for real? Okay.
For well, real? Then, Charles. Starbucks, right? Got to move this camera over here somehow because it's just not either good. There we go. A little bit better.
There we go.
All right, Matt, what do we got?
All right, so first off, I wanted to show in our handouts that we have today, we have a new Excel spreadsheet that we've gotten from our custodian, which shows the average recording time in most of all of the counties in the United States. And it also goes from not just a county, but District of Columbia. It also goes to Puerto Rico. So they have the average times that it is to record, as well as the average times that it is to get the documents back. So whenever we have these documents that we're sending out, if you have any questions about the timeline, you can always refer back to this. And we are going to put this on the member side also, but I wanted to go ahead and put it on the call so that you could download it and kind of look at it as look at it at your own discretion. So,
did you have it open?
I do not have it open, but I can open it.
I have it open.
Oh, Zarina. I do.
You gotta stay ready, Matt.
Yep.
There we go.
Okay.
So average days recorded, and then average days return. I guess that's how long they take to mail it back to you?
Average days return,
yes.
Average days recorded.
That's actually, that is cumulative. So I might, before we focus on the member side, add the cumulative days, which is like, for instance, that Deb, the one that you were just showing, which is Geneva. Well, you keep moving. So Henry, all right. So, so like, for instance, the one that says 101 and 20, that would be added together to a total of 121 days. So it, So The average days returned also is after the recorded date, so is what I understand it. So
this is additional.
So those will be added together. And like I said, before we put it on the member side, I might add that to it now that we're talking about it, so that we have cumulative days out. And then you'll be able to say, okay, this is whenever it goes out, I know that I'll have the physical copy either back to my servicer or back to me, so that I can send it to my servicer or whoever, my attorney or whoever. So, but you'll be able to get you should be able to get a copy before it goes out. And once it's recorded, you might be able to get it on the county recorder's site. But that's the other thing. It will not be received back to custodian until that in Alaska, which we don't do a lot of work in Alaska. But 121 days, and that's when you would actually have the physical copy from the recorder. So
that's crazy.
And I always recommend contacting the county recorder. Make sure you've got the address, where to send the deed to, and make sure there's not any other documentation that they need to accompany the deed into that county recorder's office. I was talking with the custodian the other day, and while it's great that, you know, Baldwin County takes 28 days, that's only if they don't reject it three times, you know. Keep in mind, counties are very particular. Every county has a different requirement, and I was discussing this with our custodian, because even when they contact the counties and say, okay, here's the document, this is what we're sending, and they send it, they say nine times out of ten, they reject it, come back, okay, it's not the right font size, they don't like, it's not the correct deeds type. So there's many things that they there's many things that they will reject it for. So, you know, it's good to kind of call and contact the local county office. And I always get the name of a person there that I talk to. And then I always say, can I send this to your attention? Or they'll tell me whose attention to send it to. So I always try to establish a little bit of a relationship on my individual deals, because at least I've got a point of contact to go back to and say, okay, you rejected this, and this is not what you told me. So,
Matt, is there a way you can put a drop down on these things too, so they could just go straight to the
State? Filter, you mean? The filter on
Yeah.
I'll put that in before we do that and before next call. So you got to get it up to have people look at it before you realize what's wrong with it, right?
Good deal, because this is good to have. It is nice to know really what you can anticipate in certain counties. So, Matt, just let us know where we post that on the member site, but that's definitely good to have.
All right. So, y'all want to, we'll go ahead, and we have a quick little question. It's a drill down question from Fred Boyd. So, I can go ahead and pull him in, or if you wanted to just read it, we can. Let me check to make sure he's on here, by the way. He's not on the call as of right now, so I'll go ahead and read it. So he found out one of his servicers that a 404 notice was supposed to be sent to a borrower within 3 days of the date that he bought the note from the previous owner. So his first question was, how do we do this? And given that the time that it takes to get all the documents moved around from note purchased, it seems that this 30-day frame is a real crunch. He looked through his notes. So basically, he was at a 3 day, and he wrote down some information on that. So what is the actual process of the 404 letter?
Well, the 404 letter, your servicer, when we transfer servicing, so if you buy an asset from Colonial, the current servicer that's servicing that note for Colonial will start the servicing transfer to your servicer. Our servicer, Colonial servicer, will send the goodbye letter. The goodbye letter has to go out to that borrower within 15 days of that transfer, period. And it's basically giving that borrower 15 days or notice that we're transferring your servicer. The 404 letter is basically a notification as well that your servicer will send out typically within 30 days of the acquisition date of that property. Now then, make sure that once your servicer boards that note, that asset, if you don't have the collateral file yet, they can go ahead and proceed with that 404 notice. Once they board the loan, they can go ahead and proceed with the 404 notice. I have some servicers that do not send out a 404 notice. They send out the hello letter. Once the goodbye letter expires, they'll send out a hello letter saying, hello, we're your new servicer. The biggest letter that, or I guess legally, RESPA, you want to make sure that the goodbye letter is sent out, which the servicers, our servicers always send the goodbye letter. But I have transferred assets or had assets transferred to a servicer where they didn't send out 404 letters, just the goodbye letters. So just don't let the collateral file or the deed documents interfere with, you know, your time frames. I mean, the servicer should be able to go ahead and board that note. I know some servicers want to see the recorded deeds. My servicer doesn't request the recorded deeds. They just they board the asset, and then they proceed with the RESPA notices. So, but the 404 notice is separate from the goodbye letter. So our servicer sends a goodbye letter. Your servicer can send the 404 notice, which is just the ownership transfer. But you just tell your servicer to notify your servicer to send the 404 once they get the loan boarded. Is Fred on?
He was not on. So there's a few questions that came in on the board. So first off, we'll go to Brian's question first, which is he just wants to clarify something. If there's no change of servicing, is there a need for the 404 letter to
take? No, there's not. And that's an excellent question, Brian. Glad you asked that. So If we have a loan boarded with Peak and you buy that asset and you transfer it to Peak, there's no 404 notice needed to go, nor is there a goodbye letter that goes. Basically, there's a notification that's probably similar to the 404 notice, basically saying there's a change of ownership, but the servicing will continue to stay with the current servicer. So that's a great question, and that's the advantage of, you know, when we have servicers and you can transfer it to the same servicer. That's an advantage because they don't have, there's no 404 notice that has to go out.
Okay. And so what are the ramifications if that letter, if you change servicers and that letter doesn't go out, what's going to happen?
Nothing happens. I mean, I've had pools that I've never sent the 404 notices out. You know, it's good to have it go out so if it ever came back. I've never ever in my life had one come back that, you know, I got penalized because I didn't send a 404 notice out. My biggest concern is that the goodbye letter goes out, that there is a RESPA goodbye letter that goes out given the borrower notice. And, again, the 404 notice is basically the change of ownership, and your servicer generally sends a hello letter out to the borrower once that loan's boarded. Saying that, you know, the servicing is transferred and they're the new servicer. Okay. And that acts, I mean, it's comparison to the 404 notice. It's not a 404 notice as outlined in RESPA. But I have had loans, a lot of loans I've boarded that 404 notices didn't go out. One of my servicers always said that was an option. If I wanted to pay to have that notice, they would send it. And so just as a precaution, I always sent it. But a lot of times that I didn't send the 404 notice.
Gotcha.
Okay. And so I'm going to unmute Robin and let her ask that question. She's put it on the board. So Robin, you're up. Yeah, go ahead.
Don't unmute Robin.
Hi, Robin.
Hey, everybody. Okay, well, that brought me, just jogged my memory. That so I bought a note. And then I ended up selling it within about 10 days. Now, when the note seller I bought it from was self-servicing it. So do I need to send anything out, I guess? I know you don't have to send a goodbye letter, but do I need to send since I resold it within about 10 days?
Well, typically when you resell them that quick, you know, your goodbye letters can cross in the mail, Robin. So
yeah.
Because the guy you bought it from needed to send out a goodbye letter, and then you'll need to send out a goodbye letter also. But you can't, you know, they're going to cross in the mail pretty much. Just be real careful. I mean, you don't need to send the 404 notice, but you do need to send out a goodbye letter.
Okay. Well, I mean, I know you say be careful of crossing the mail, but hey, if I put an effective date on there, I can't be responsible for what the original note holder does or doesn't do, right?
Right, but just push your effective date out. I mean, you can push that effective date out a little, you know, 30 days out.
Yeah, okay.
On that contract, you can set the effective date on there, you know. I mean, but were you anticipating selling it that quick? Let me ask you that.
Well, no, I was not. But I had somebody make me an offer I couldn't refuse, so.
Well, I mean, you can go ahead and put it on contract, at least give them time for your goodbye letter or for the goodbye letter that's currently out to expire, which is 15 days.
Okay. All right. Well, then I'm probably okay because this happened about 2 weeks ago, so.
The person you sold it to, are they going to self-service it?
No, I don't know, because in fact, in my purchase and sale agreement to them, I told them I had to have a servicer because I just wanted to put that in there. And if they change, that's their So.
Did you send out a goodbye letter?
No, I haven't yet.
Okay. So, when did you close this note?
Let's see. It was like April 23rd, something like that.
Okay.
Maybe actually more like, I take that back, maybe more like the 18th or something.
Okay, so you probably want to go ahead and get a goodbye letter out this week.
Okay.
Yeah, because there's a, typically from the transfer day, there's only a 15-day time frame that you can send the goodbye letters, technically.
You know, I guess this brings something up, Charles. I could have sworn I had read somewhere a goodbye letter is not required. The hello letter is, but the goodbye letter is not. Am I wrong? Do I have that wrong?
No, a goodbye letter is required under the RESPA laws.
Is it the hello letter that's not required, or what?
The hello letter is not required. I always have people. I always have my servicers send some type of notification.
Okay.
We call it a hello letter. It may just be a, you know, little short paragraph, but we call it the hello letter. But the hello letter is not necessary. But the 30-day, I mean, excuse me, the goodbye letter, 15-day goodbye letter is required.
Okay. Maybe I did know. Maybe I'm just thinking backwards. But
yeah,
okay.
Sometimes you get those confused. But yeah. The goodbye letter is required. The hello letter is not necessarily required. Service just do that as an industry standard because they want to make sure the payments are coming to the correct person or correct
service. And I can certainly see. I think the hello letter is a lot more important than the goodbye letter.
They're both good. They both need to reach out. They both serve a purpose, so they'll stop sending payments to the previous servicer and. Right. You know, and payments are not being lost or returned because a lot of times after the servicing transfers, if they send a payment, sometimes the servicer will forward them to the new servicer, and a lot of times the servicer will just send them back to the borrower.
Okay. Well, I appreciate the
back the day the borrower is going to the casino, and you'll never see that payment because they're going to the casino with that.
I understand. Thank you.
Thanks.
Thanks, Robin.
All right, Matt.
All right. And under the law, what is the penalty for not sending it? What happens if you don't send a goodbye letter? Does that slow down the process of the transfer? How does that work?
And again, the goodbye letters, you're going to look at that from a servicer's a servicer servicing multiple loans. For them to come in and say, you bought one loan, you didn't service transfer, it's not likely that's going to happen. You know, the penalties, I'd have to go back and read the 400 pages of RESPA to see what the penalties are. But, you know, RESPA is not a short document. It's a book. So, honestly, I can't quote what the penalties are. Knock on wood. Zarina's head's not here, so I'll knock on my desk.
Oh, no, he didn't.
But I've never been penalized for not sending a goodbye letter. And very rarely have I not sent a goodbye letter, but there have been instances where I ran out of time and I didn't get a goodbye letter sent. On a rare occasion.
All right. Well, let's move on down to the Sarah's question here. She has some follow-up question. Now she's bought a couple of assets and she's wanting to know what she needs to be doing now that she's bought those assets. So, and of course, Sarah hasn't made it on the call either yet. So she said she was going to be on. Sarah, if you are under a different name, raise your hand. Otherwise, we are going to go to the next one and kind of wait for you. So I believe I saw Lisa saying some stuff about a mic or something. So.
Lisa wants to have a garage sale. I think she's on the wrong call. Is Lisa on here?
Lisa, you are unmuted. Go ahead. Unless Lisa doesn't have her mic yet. Lisa, have you gotten a new mic yet? No?
Oops.
I've got her unmuted, Zarina.
Yeah, I unmuted the wrong Lisa. My bad.
All right, well, I'll go ahead and read it up for you, Charles, and then let you kind of on this a little bit. So she just evicted a party with the land who was on the land contract and took it out all the way to the sheriff's put out. And her boots on the ground tell her that the person who was in the property left more than two dumpsters worth of stuff between the house and the garage. I did ask her, she doesn't have pictures on it yet or a list of the items that are in there. But she was wanting to know if there would be a problem if she advertised to hold a garage sale to get rid of some of the stuff prior to having it paying to have it hauled off. What she was thinking was that she would have a neutral third-party garage sale, not really making any money off of it, but basically getting all the stuff out of it and making it useful to making all the stuff find a new home that's it's not going to be used anymore. So what's the liability there for?
Well, I mean, this is very creative, thinking outside of the box. You know, the good thing about this is, you know, Lisa's thinking out, okay, I'm going to have two dumpsters. I got $3,000 worth of trash that it needs to go, that's going to have to be trashed out. Maybe I can sell some of it and kind of eliminate the cost of the rest of it being put into one dumpster. But I've never had a garage sale. Again, if I had pictures to kind of see what we're looking at, you know, is there furniture or is it just a bunch of old clothes and stuff? I used to hire a third-party company years ago that went out to homes when the furniture and stuff were in homes and do an auction. They would auction it off. The proceeds would come back, you know, and I mean, we would make money just because we'd auction off the stuff. But by doing that, we would legally send a notice that we were going to hold a public auction at the property and give the tenant or the occupant 30 days notice. Yes.
There she is.
Lisa.
Oh, we had her for a second.
I'm here.
Okay.
Yes. I really do have a mic. Oh, no.
Yeah, I can hear you.
I'm here.
How are you?
Yay, good.
good.
I just want all this junk gone.
So, Lisa, is it furniture?
That's all I want.
Is it furniture?
That's what my guy told me. He told me it's mostly a bunch of ancient old furniture, and he said the garage is so full, he cannot even get the garage door open.
Ooh. Okay.
I'm just trying to get rid of stuff. I just want to know if there's any liability if I'm, quote, selling. Well, not even selling. I don't want to make any money. I just want people to come over and help themselves.
What state is it, Lisa?
Missouri. Jackson okay. County, Missouri.
And as I was saying, and I don't know if you'd heard, I used to use a third-party auction company, went out to and did personal property auctions for me.
No, I don't think there's any money. I wouldn't do that to an auctioneer. No, it's my understanding it's like a second trash dump.
Yeah, I mean, you could, just to be safe, I would send a notice just saying, you know, this, and, you know, I'm sure you don't know where they occupant went to when the sheriff moved them out. Did the sheriff actually physically come out to the property?
Yep, sheriff was out there for a little while yesterday, but she split on Sunday. But she left behind a hoarder's nightmare.
Yeah.
Or a hoarder's dream, technically.
Yeah. Well, it's a smart idea having a garage sale, Lisa. I would send out a 30-day notice just stating that, you know, if the personal belongings are not removed, then we will, you know, remove them or dispose of them in any way we see fit. And the only address, if you don't have a forwarding address, you just send it to the address you got, you know, the last known address for the occupant.
Okay.
And then if you got a third party wants to go out there and pull that stuff out and put it in the driveway and let people come by and buy it for a dollar, then I would say go for it.
Yeah, all you can carry for a buck, right?
Here's what I do recommend, though, Lisa. The liability is the lady got up and she left. So, you know, the liability is you know, does she come back a year from now and say, yes, I had a
jewelry
in that garage that is gone. It was worth $1 million, you know. Yep. And then you're going to have to show proof that it wasn't there. So make sure you have pictures from every angle.
Yeah, he's taken all the pictures today, and he's going to email them to me because he said otherwise it's too much, and he would blow up my phone.
Yeah, no, just make sure you got pictures. So if they ever came back, you can say, "This is your honor. Here's what was in the garage. I've got pictures from every angle."
Okay, I'll do that, Charles.
But good job thinking outside the box here, Lisa.
Well, I think the guy who's there to do the cleaning up, Charles, is shocked. I mean, I think he's afraid to give me a bid for the cleanup that I'll say no because it's so much stuff.
Well, I mean, I'd go ahead and get a bid just so you can see how much junk was there.
I've already told him it's going to cost what it's going to cost. He just did another clean out for me, and I thought his price was very reasonable. So.
Perfect.
Thank you, Charles.
I don't see a problem doing a garage sale. I would just send another. I would send one notice though, so just so I say I notify them.
Okay, I'll do that. Thank you.
Charles, how long would you wait for that notice to go out before you would take action, or would you do it immediately?
I'd give him a 30-day notice. Yeah, I'd give him a 30-day notice. You know, first I determine, will somebody come by and, you know, people are always looking for junk. I mean, you know, why do you get rid of furniture is just to put it out in your front yard? And I mean, They will pick it up quicker than anything. Exactly.
Well, if you put a sign on it that says $50, they'll steal it. If you say free, it won't go anywhere.
Exactly. I don't put a sign on it. You know, they just come by curious if it's for sale or if they can steal it, and they're going to take the stealing. They take it. So.
Yep.
I had two old weed eaters in my garage. They'd been there for 10 years, Zarina, and about a month ago, I set them both out on the curb because I was like, I do not want these weed eaters in my garage anymore. And I'll tell you, in an hour, they were gone.
They were watching.
They were watching, and within an hour, they were gone. And you know what? They could have them.
Yeah. Wow.
All right, Matt. Got any questions?
Oh, got all kinds of comments on this one. The other point is she could basically just do the garage sale notification for the same date 30 days out of the notice that was sent out. Correct?
Do what now?
So she sends out the notice and 30 days later she's going to have a garage sale. She can put it in the Craigslist or whatever for 30 days post the notification being sent out at the same time, couldn't she?
She could, but the problem is that somebody may not remember the garage sale from Craigslist 30 days down the road. You know, I'd probably advertise it the week I was going to hold the garage sale.
Cool. Yeah, we've got donate to Goodwill, donate to charity.
Charity ain't going to take a bunch of junk.
Who won't?
And that's it, Goodwill. They want clothes pressed and starched. Now,
Goodwill wants high quality trash. Yeah,
they don't take just junk anymore. They've changed their limits up a bit. Nothing
got
worse
some than starch on those jeans and everything.
Protect you, right, Zarina?
Mm-hmm. Goodwill's got a good thing going. They get all their stuff for free and they turn it for a profit. And everybody who works for them is volunteering, so.
But they give you a receipt right off your income tax.
That's true.
All
right. Let me see if Sarah's made it back on. Otherwise, we can kind of read through her. There she is.
Ooh, Sarah, you were late.
You have yourself muted. There you go. Go ahead.
Okay. Actually, I was on, but I was just on via the phone. So I'm sitting outside of Panera right now so I can get free Wi-Fi. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yes, we can hear you, Sarah. How are you?
Okay. Great. it's a little choppy, but okay. So I just bought my first two notes, and I want to make sure I'm doing things right. I bought the note. It's been boarded with the servicer. I received the collateral files from Colonial. It's an unrecorded land contract, okay. And I haven't gotten the assignment, gotten it assigned to me yet. Okay. What is the average time frame on that? I know I asked before, but I couldn't.
Sarah, it can take 4 to 6 weeks. Now, we have some that we had a delay or rejects from some recordings of deeds, so that can take a little longer. But you should be getting that, sir.
Hello?
Sarah, can you hear me?
Yep.
Now I can. You just cut out for a sec. Let me just go inside so I can hear you.
Okay.
1 second. Yeah. Okay, so how long did you say it would take?
So you should be getting that pretty quick. You've gotten the collateral file, and typically the assignments will follow shortly thereafter collateral file. But I allow 4 to 6 on that follow package. Just depends on
four
the volume. Depends on the volume that they're dealing with at the custodian's offices. But you should be getting that really pretty quick.
Okay.
And it's an unrecorded land contract, right?
Yes, and I don't record it. Is that correct?
That's correct. Yeah. The only thing you'll record will be you'll just record the deed to you.
Okay, now that's where I'm confused. And I don't know if I'm just getting hung up on terminology, but how do I record a deed when I don't own the property? Am I thinking, is it the same as a lien?
Yes. The deed is conveying the property, is basically conveying the lien to you. Okay, you're going to be the note holder.
Okay.
You don't own the property, but you're going to get a deed conveying the security of that property. So you're, in essence, you will be the bank. You're going to be the lien holder. And you'll want to record you'll want to record that deed in the county in which the property is located in.
Okay. I think that's what was hanging me up, because I was thinking deeds were only for property owners and that note holders had liens.
Basically, it's an assignment. You'll get an unrecorded land contract. You'll get an assignment of land contract, which you will not record either because the land contract is unrecorded. And then you'll get a general warranty deed.
Okay.
Which conveys the title from Colonial to your entity.
And do I need to wait until I get the assignment to file the deed?
No, you can go ahead and file the deed.
Okay.
Since the deed is the only instrument you're recording, you can go ahead and record your deed.
Okay. And I was listening to some really old podcasts or some really old webinars from like 3 or 4 years ago, and on there one of them said if it was an unrecorded land contract, you should record it, but then the more recent ones are saying if it's unrecorded, leave it unrecorded.
That was before my day. That was back in Zarina's day.
So I just want to make sure that
Was that a Zarina podcast?
No, it was Eddie.
Oh, it was Eddie.
I just want to make sure I'm doing it right.
No, it's an unrecorded land contract. Do not record the land. Do not record the land contract.
Okay. So I guess I'm used to being a hands-on landlord and a flipper, so I feel like there's more that I should be doing. Am I covering all my bases?
You are. The key is, what are you going to do with it after you record your deed?
Well, it was a non-performing note when I bought it, but I kind of suspected that it was sub-performing because of the info in the collateral file, and not in the documents, the Dropbox documents. So I called and talked to the servicer, and they said it is subperforming, and they've been talking with the borrower, and it's on the verge of becoming performing again. So I'm going to give it a few months and see what happens.
Oh, that's good. Yeah.
Looks like the Facebook.
I got a super cheap price on it.
Oh, that's even better.
I know. Okay, that sounds good. I just wanted to check.
Yep.
Okay, and I guess my other question was, if when I send in a question to content, what's the average turnaround time? Because I don't want to be a pest, but I want to make sure that my question got to the right people too.
Well, and we'll talk about this a little more in a minute, but yes, when you send that to content, it goes to several people. It doesn't go just to one person. So typically, Matt will respond to the content. He always responds to the content email. For the calls, and he'll set it up for the call.
Okay. Because I sent one in Thursday, and I didn't hear back from anyone, so I didn't know if maybe my email went to spam or something. And like I said, I don't want to be a pest and bug people, but I just wanted to make sure the email was received.
If you don't hear back, definitely send it back again. Now,
okay.
Matt and I were both out. It goes several different people, but Matt and I were both out last Thursday. So,
okay.
Me too.
That's the point of sending it to... replying all or sending it to, anytime you send information to content or post closing or any of our email addresses, when you respond back, make sure you reply all, because if you just reply to to you and then you just reply back to me, everybody else doesn't see it.
Right.
So make sure you, when you're doing that, you reply all to the email so it goes back to everybody that's on that email address.
And Charles and Sarah, let me jump in here. I usually have a response back to you before the next call, So if you're, say, for instance, on a Thursday and it would have been for Tuesday,
yeah,
a little abnormal because I was out of town until I started back Monday. So you would have normally had a response back of, hey, yeah, we're gonna look at having this back on. But if the next call comes and goes and you have not had a response yet, please bring that back in and say, hey, look, second attempt, I didn't get any response on this. Can I hear something back from it? Because either if we're going to put it on the call or not, we'll still get back to you and say, hey, look, this is something we are going to put on or something we might handle offline, and we'll let you know either way.
Okay. I think I'm just super paranoid because the first time I submitted an offer, it went into somebody's spam folder and never – it took a while to get seen, so now I'm like, did they get the email? Did they not? kind of thing.
Gotcha.
So, but, all right, you helped me clear it up. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Sarah.
Give it to me.
All right, as far as the submitted content, we are at our open mic portion of it. So if anyone has a question that they want to submit, and or put it into the boards and have us talk about it, or raise your hand. And
I feel like you need like a transition theme song right now. Just
move. I don't know which one we would put on that, but yeah, yeah. So either way, all right. So we've got Michael. He's asking. He thought, for a land contract, the seller of the property keeps the deed until the payer or borrower pays the contract in full, and then the deed goes to buyer. Can you confirm?
Correct.
Yeah. True.
That is true.
Yeah.
So the simplest way is just like a, you know, simplest way to remember it is like when you buy a car and the bank finances it, the bank holds your title. They're the lien holder. But when you pay that car off, they pay that title, and I mean, they pay it in full, and they send you the title to that property or to that car.
Hopefully, that answers your question. Bill's got his hand raised, Matt. you know.
I didn't see a notation. There we go, Bill.
Sure.
Go ahead.
Hello? Can you hear me?
Yeah, how are you?
Oh, how are you? It's actually an extension of the same question. I think you said, you, and this may have been a mistake, you know, just misspoke, but on the previous question, you said that the deed is what conveys the rights as far as the foreclosure stuff and stuff like that. But from the notes that I've read, that's in the land contract, not in the deed. In other words, it has all the information that you have in a note, and it had all the information as what the penalties and remedies are.
It's in the land contract itself, yes.
Yes, but okay. Yeah.
Okay, and so, so that's what it said. And you get an assignment of land contract, so they're assigning that interest, that land contract, to you as well. But as the lien holder, that deed is recorded in your name. You get a deed that you record, recording the lien in your name, basically.
Yes, but you are essentially the owner because you held the deed.
You're essentially the owner, but you cannot go in there and just kick the borrower out of the property.
You have to go through.
Yeah. No, no, I understand. I understand that, but you know, he who holds the deed is the owner. Other than you have all this business about the equity rights versus the legal equity. What is it? Equity position versus legal position?
Yeah.
Or whatever that is.
Equity. You have an equitable interest in the property. Yes.
Right. So it's not absolute, but the fact is, he who holds the deed is the owner.
We just be careful how we talk about that, because I have had people that have bought a land contract and have gone up, knocked on the door, and asked the people to get out of their house.
Ah, I see.
Yeah. And so you have to be careful. We have to be careful when we talk about that, because a lot of times people don't understand. You have to go through a foreclosure or termination process
in order
to actually take title to the property itself.
And a termination process is generally laid out in the land contract itself.
No, it's not. It's it may mention the termination process, but it just depending on what state the land contract's in. Uh-huh. legal, the judicial system will decide whether you can do a termination or a foreclosure. Or have to
well, that, again, the land contracts I've read, it specifically states that you have this, and that during this period, you will be, you can simply be asked to leave after the 24 months, then, you know, something else happens.
Well, you have a 24-month probationary period, and if you pay accordingly to the probationary period, then the land contracts, they're all different, keep in mind, but a majority of the ones we see, they stipulate that the borrower can request that you convert it to a note and deed of trust.
Ah, yes, I've seen that.
If they don't pay according to the probationary period, they're in default, or you still have to go through a termination process of the land contract. So okay. You cannot just go up there and tell the people, you didn't pay as agreed, get out of my house. You still have, to go through a termination or foreclosure process. And right, although the land contract may call for a termination, I haven't had attorneys that handle foreclosures for me come back and say, we can't get a judgment. We have to get a judgment. They're going to require foreclosure. They're not going to allow us to terminate. Where a termination really comes in handy a lot of times is if the property is vacated, then it in a lot of states it makes it a lot simpler to terminate it because they've already vacated. So they've abandoned the property. So basically you just send like an eviction notice.
Okay. That sounds that clarifies things a bit.
Clear as mud?
Clear as mud, right?
Well, land contracts, you know, it's just never gonna be very clear.
Well, they've got good things to them.
What lawyers are for.
Exactly. We buy a lot of land contracts, but at the end, the lawyers are the one that handle the foreclosures or the terminations for us.
Cool. All right, Charles, Fred was asking if you could clarify the allonge versus the assignment of land contract. Yeah, let me grab him in then.
You clarify the lounge versus the assignment of land.
I'm not sure if he's meaning if it's on the same one. So let me, Fred, go ahead.
Good morning, guys. Afternoon, I'm sorry.
Hey, Fred.
Evening.
I'm just having a little bit of a hard time teasing out what's an lounge and what's an assignment. These are pre-existing. You know, I thought the lounge was only the first step between the borrower and the initial lender. But that doesn't appear to be the case in the paperwork that we're getting.
So, Fred, an allonge is basically an endorsement of a note, okay? So when you're buying a land contract, very few land contracts have notes. Some may have a note incorporated in the land contract, but most of them are just land contracts, okay? So if you have just a land contract, you're not going to have a note to endorse. There is no note to endorse. So therefore, if you don't have a note, you don't have an allonge. So basically, the allonge is endorsing the note paid to the order of whoever's buying it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, the assignment, you're going to have an assignment in any legal document you deal with. If you're dealing with a note mortgage, you're going to have an assignment of mortgage. If you have a land contract, you're going to have an assignment of land contract. So you'll always have an assignment, but you may not always have an allonge. So if you have a real estate note, you should have an allonge to follow that note. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So assignments go with
everything.
The assignments go with every. Well, so an assignment would go with a mortgage and a note, so I would get two assignments in that case?
No. You're either going to have a note mortgage or you're going to have a land contract. Some cases you may have a land contract and a note, but most cases the land contracts don't incorporate notes in them. But you'll always have one assignment for every mortgage note that you buy. Okay, but you don't do an assignment for mortgage and assignment for the note. You're just assigning the mortgage.
I recently went through the process of recording a special warranty deed on a land contract, and I had a discussion with the county auditor about whether the amount that I had paid for the note, which was recorded on the special warranty deed, was the amount that I, whether that was a property price or whether that was, in other words, real estate that should be taxed as real with a real estate transfer fee, or whether it was personal property that I was buying the right to the payments. What is sort of standard in terms of, you know, am I actually recording the transfer of a property? I guess
well,
I am.
Different in different counties, okay? So some counties want the assessed value of the property because they want the most transfer taxes they can get. So generally, you can contact, you know, some counties will take $100 and good or $10 and other good and valuable consideration, but most counties now are starting to kick that back and reject those because they want at least what you paid for the note in there as a consideration amount. But, you know, I record deeds every day, or my custodian does, that, you know, I send them copies of, you know, what I pay for them, and they're still coming back, kicking them back, saying, you know, this has to go for assessed value. So, you know, it's going to depend on the county you're recording it in.
Okay.
So, and generally our custodian, they're familiar with these counties, and they'll go back and now then a lot of times they'll send a deed in for recording, and they'll put $10 and other good and valuable consideration in the county, a particular county, to come back and say, no, we're going to assess, put it in as assessed value. So every county is different. I know we've had students that have taken their deeds to be recorded, and the county actually let them mark through the consideration amount and change it to $10. So, I mean, it's every county is different. There's nothing consistent about the consideration amounts.
In the normal flow of a land contract, does the borrower, buyer, he doesn't pay any transaction fee until he's paid off the entire land contract amount?
What do you mean, pay any type of transaction fee?
Well, I mean, like, I just paid a transaction fee to this little county, and I don't think the actual the person paying on the note has yet paid a transaction fee. It's not been recorded.
They haven't, because you're not recording anything in their name.
So they will pay when they get the final deed.
Right. When they go and record their final deed, they'll have to pay a transfer tax at that point.
Okay.
If it's required. Some states have transfer tax. Some states have dock stamps. Different municipalities have different revenue streams, you know, and a lot of that revenue is collected through what they call documentary stamps or transfer taxes. And it just depends on which county it is. So when you know, it's always good to look at that. You know, call the county and say, hey, look, you know, is there transfer taxes when I buy a property? Is there dock stamps that I have to buy when I buy a property? It's a revenue stream for income for the different counties. But they're not regulated by the government, or the, you know, it's not like a federal regulation. It's up to those municipalities what they charge. Just like some states have a state tax, you know, and some states don't have to pay state tax.
Yeah.
Are these ever huge amounts? I mean, it seems like they're $30, $40, $50. Is that typical?
In states with dock stamps, they can be $700, $800. It's typically. I mean, I was talking to someone yesterday, and we were talking about, I believe it was either transfer stamps or dock stamps. It may have been dock stamps. And it was, you know, 70 cents per $100, you know, or 70 cents per 100. So it ended up being several hundred dollars to record this deed. So it can,
wow.
It can be. And again, that's not regulated. So that's going to be county or municipality specific, county specific. But, you know, sometimes they're 30 cents per hundred, you know, sometimes are 70 cents per hundred. But it's always a good, it's always a good question to ask the county when you're calling the county recorder's office, because that is an expense sometimes when you're recording a deed.
So do you think that's something we should be doing in our due diligence process, or is that does it seldom make the difference?
Well, I mean, you don't want to. I mean, it's a cost of doing business. You know, I mean, I bought a property and I had to record my deed and I had to pay a transfer tax and I had to pay a dock stamp tax. So, you know, it's just, I just expect I'm going to have to pay some type of transfer taxes on top of my recording my deed. But there are some counties you don't have any expenses in. I mean, you know, it's county specific, but there are counties that you don't have any. But if you want to do that with your due diligence, that's up to you. I mean, that's just, you just put that in your due diligence plan.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. What else, Matt?
All right, let me look to see if any more. Get a hand here. Let me. Well, I saw
Mike Rogers.
Huh?
Mike Rogers.
Yeah, I'm looking. He's got his hand up. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Michael, go ahead.
Thank you, Serena. She saw me. Yeah. Hey, guys, how y'all doing?
Hey, how are you?
Good, good. I'm sorry to keep battling on this land contract versus deed versus lien, but I had said, my question I tried to ask was, it sounded like that you had said to Sarah, or I misheard you, Charles, that when you have a land contract, you're right, you only really have a lien against the property. And that's what I got confused, because I thought Sarah would actually own the deed or own the house and it not be a lien. So that's, maybe I'm getting confused.
Well, you don't, again, you are the lien holder, okay? It's just like you're a mortgage holder on your house. They're the lien holder. They don't own the house. They have a collateral. I mean, they're the lien holder. They can foreclose on it and take possession of the home, but you're transferring as far as transferring, you have a collateral interest in that land contract. Okay? I guess that's the best way to put it. You've got a collateral interest in the land contract, but it typically boils down to you are a lien holder and you can't just go in there and take the house. It's not
right.
Like, because yes, the title is in your name, but you're tied to that land contract, basically.
Okay.
And basically what that land contract reads is that I will pay you payments up till the day, you know, till the maturity date, and at that time you deed the property to me. And you're right. The title is in your name.
Okay.
So if a municipality goes in there and somebody goes in and looks at deed records, they're going to say Mike owns this house.
Right. Which are you saying, Mike, as the borrower or as the seller?
No, I'm sorry. Well, you would. They would look at it and say you own the house because the deed is in your name.
Right. Okay. So I guess the deed, because to me the definition of a deed is a document that says who has the ownership, and the lien is more of a contractual legal right to take an action.
Right.
Okay. So the land contract means if I have the land contract and I own the house and I've got a borrower paying me monthly payments, I have the deed because I own the house and the land contract.
Right. Right.
And the lien, so where does the lien come in that scenario? Who has the lien?
Basically, it's not a lien, it's the land contract and the deed, okay? I mean, saying the land contract, I mean, you're, that deed, that lien is tied to that land contract.
Okay.
Again, you have a collateral interest in that land contract.
Okay. Yeah, I think I was confusing two different vehicles. When I said the deed is really a statement of ownership and the lien gives me the right to take a legal action, they're two separate things.
Right. Correct.
Yeah, I think that's what was confusing me, so I've got it now.
Okay. Sometimes land contracts are confusing. Sometimes they can be.
I know. Quite a few of us have questions, and I have the same questions that other people are asking, so it's very helpful to be on these calls again. Okay, thanks.
All right. And as I was showing, if you go to the train tab, go over to your mini lessons, scroll down to the bottom right, there is a mini lesson on land contracts that might help clear up any of the questions you have as far as what the land contract is and the vehicle that it is that secures the property. So,
there's also some on the non-performing side, same thing.
Oh, sorry, I went to the wrong point. Yeah, it's on the non-performing side.
It's on both sides, yeah.
So, you've never confused which call you're on, have you?
I got experience, man.
Well, that's what you get when you're expecting something else, right?
Well, Matt, we've got something coming up here in a month, don't we?
I think we do. We've got this bad boy coming up. So it's the Summer Summit. I think yesterday was our 30 day out. Yesterday was the day out to the actual Dykes Botifer class, whereas today we're about, 29 days out to the actual class, or to the Senior Summit. So
it's June, Thursday on June the 2nd, we have our Dykes Botifer class, which will be hosted here in Dallas at the American Airlines Center, same location as the Summer Summit. If you have not signed up or registered for this, I think it's going to be a great entity structuring class that you'll definitely want to attend. I believe the cost on this is $250. Anything proceeds from that go to the Child Welfare Board. It's all donations, charitable donations. And then on a Thursday night, we're going to Fort Worth to a barbecue place, actually considered one of the best barbecue places in downtown Fort Worth. And then I think there's going to be some entertainment on top of that as well, correct, Matt?
Yeah, they've got a cowboy comedian who does a lot of topical humor, I guess, on certain issues that go throughout. So they're going to have him talking to everybody and kind of entertaining the crowd also. So.
And then on Friday and Saturday the 3rd and the 4th will be our Summer Summit. Have a lot of great content. We're finishing up the schedule now, and we'll have that out here before long. But if you haven't registered, the deadline will be coming up. We have not set the deadline for the registration, but we are trying to get the headcount. So if you haven't registered, please do so as soon as possible. It just makes it so much easier trying to get our headcount in for the food and everything that we have lined up for the Summer Summit. And then for everybody that bought at the auction at the last note or November event, that bought Dinner with Eddie and Martha, that'll be on June 4th that evening. And so they'll have transportation out to their home. So anybody that bought that with the auction, that'll be on June the 4th that evening. Nice. And then on Sunday, there's a Rich Rewards class also going that weekend. So June 3rd through the 5th, they've got the 3-day class going on in the same location. So it'll be a fun-filled weekend for sure.
Which that brings up a good point. If you are going to come to the event and stay over to the Rich Rewards class, please register for the Rich Rewards class, because we are going to take a head count, but it's going to also be nice to know in advance that if you are coming. But we will take a head count also, just to let you know or to know how many seats we're going to need for that last day instead of cramming everybody in and sitting on top of everybody. So you can share seats, but that might get awkward for some people. So.
What else, Zarina?
Nothing. I'm just hanging out, being moral support, I guess.
It was nice seeing you the last couple of nights,
Yeah. Well, I'll be on more of these because I think I can't get out of it now, but I'll just be hanging out.
Well, good. We enjoy you hanging out, having you around. All right, everybody. Is that it, Matt?
That's all we had. So,
thanks, everybody. Y'all have a great evening, and we'll see you again soon.
All right. Bye, guys.
Bye.